Retrograde, Chapter 6, Paraguay, Part 1. The meal is an awkward affair. Niccolo downs all his soup and almost a whole loaf of bread before his stomach cramps up and he has to stop. He's left with nothing to occupy himself as the others, who pace themselves better than he, continue spooning mouthfuls in silence. Andy tops up his wine glass without a word, and he fiddles with the incredibly fine stem of the glass. It feels as though it will crack between his fingers, as does this fragile piece between the four of them. Joseph keeps glancing up at him, small, quick looks that are meant to be hidden. But Niccolo is so on edge he sees them every time. He occupies himself by studying the room they are in. It's a contradiction. It is constructed well, out of either bricks or stone, but painted over without ornamentation, like it's built for nobility but inhabited by commoners. There are many items he doesn't recognize, and more that are missing. There's no hearth, no chimney, and it's all lit by the lanterns contained in glass embedded in the ceiling. One of the items seems to be a thick iron door to nowhere, and there's a small square of paper attached to it. He stands from the table abruptly, but isn't stopped as he goes to fetch the paper. It has neat printed writing on it, some form of list in an unfamiliar language, but the script is recognizable. "This is my handwriting," he says, brandishing the slip of paper at the others. "How did you get this?" They share a glance, which only makes him angrier. "You know that you dance back and forwards through time," Joseph starts, his voice always calm and gentle. "You have to remember. From our perspective, you never leave, just change. You wrote that note yesterday, before the mission, stuck it to the fridge, and now you're standing here. It's just a list of food to buy at the market, Niccolo." "But it's in my handwriting," Niccolo says, and he recognizes how weak he sounds, like a stubborn child. He looks down at the note again and turns it over. On the back, in Ligurian this time, is the same neat print he had learnt under the tutelage of Father Giovanni di Cogorno, is a long message. He only reads the first line. "Trust them, little bird." Niccolo jolts and keeps the paper in the palm of his hand, hiding the secret note from view. There are more words present on the page, but he can't read them out here. His heart is racing, and he tries to cover it. "So, what happened yesterday?" he asks, keeping his voice level as he sits back down, pressing the paper carefully to his leg. Joseph glances at Andy and speaks slowly, picking his words like he's walking through a particularly tangled forest. "We had work to do. There was a group of people making something like opium, only much, much worse, for destroying lives, not for medicine. We went in late last night. You destroyed their supply, we stopped their work, and you were shot on the way out. You died." At that, Niall reaches out and touches Niccolo gently on the arm. "I'm sorry," she says. Her speech is heavily accented. He looks at her quizzically. "In the truck," Niall says, "I inject you." He stares at Niall. "I don't understand what you're saying." "A truck," Andy explains. "It's a carriage that moves without horses. You were violent when you revived. Niall had to give you opium poppy to go to sleep." "Oh." His eyes cast about the room. "I thought it was another death." Niall's face crumples in sympathy, and Niccolo finds he has a fondness for her, far more than for the other two. "No, it was before dawn," Joe says. "It's noon now. You've spent a few hours asleep." Niall has something to say, and she struggles through with a lot of hand gestures. She's smiling as she does so, proud and joyful as she retells a story meant to make them all laugh. "You and me same, Nicky," she says, pointing between them. "Andy take me. First time I die then alive. Andy take me. I wake up in truck too." She mimes opening her large eyes, looking around with a shocked expression. "Very confused. Angry? Yes. confused and angry. Same for you and me. I kick, fall out. Look! She points around herself with sharp jabs. Desert, desert, desert. Where am I? Bad idea. Her hands spread out comically wide, and Andy is laughing openly. Nicola can't help the small smile he wears. Tell him about the... Andy gets out. Niall doesn't release the storytelling floor easily. She's a natural at this, drawing them in with rising tension. She's pointing an accusing finger at Andy. Scary lady walking at me. I get up, want to run. Run where? I don't know. Then bang! She slams a hand on the table. Even battle-worn Niccolo startles, then laughs at himself. Andy shot me. Death number two. She holds up two fingers, then taps one on her temple. But I am smart. I wake up. Andy is angry. I is angry. I have my knife and stab her. She thumps her chest. Right here. She pulls a scowling face that Niccolo presumes to be an imitation of Andy. And it must be fairly accurate because Joseph has his face in his palm, shoulders quaking with quiet laughter. Niall mimes pulling a knife from her chest in the same manner one would flick off a fly. Niccolo laughs loudly and freely. It's only a little bit hysterical, breaking through all that time of tension and confusion. Yes, yes, Niall. We are the same. He gets out between bursts. I stabbed Joseph last week, too. Last week? Niall repeats. 1715, Joseph answers. Whoa. Niccolo is still sniggering and runs a hand through his hair, testing the length. Your Ligurian is good, he tells Niall. She pulls a face at him, like she knows he's lying to be polite. Ah, you got me, he corrects. It is fun to hear you speak it. You taught her. You taught all of us, Andy waves a hand. It's going to be a problem. What is? Languages. Italian did not become lingua franca, much as we hoped. Language of Franks, he repeats. Do you remember Sabir? Joseph asks. Of course he remembers. In his last few months of his life, before that first death at the hands of Joseph, he was a regular translator for his regiment, speaking the hodgepodge language to local traveling traders. His father had spoken Sabir quite well, often trading with those on the other side of the Mediterranean Sea. He is Genovese and very clever. The language came to him more easily than Latin. Of course I speak Sabir, do you not? He answers in the referred language. Not for a few centuries, Joseph answers back in the same. I apologize. I should have remembered it was more recent for you. Unfortunately, it didn't get far from the coastlines, and eventually English became the common language of the world. Niccolo's mouth fell open. What? England? I know they're not much from your time, but yes. No, we don't know what time or place he'll wake up in next, Andy shoots back. Spanish, Portuguese, Russian, Greek, Florentine, Italian. He's going to need Arabic too, remember? I remember, Joseph's lips harden into a thin line. Suddenly, Niccolo needs to escape. He stands abruptly and has an impulse to be vulgar, to put distance between himself and the rest of them. Where can I go to take a shit? Niall stands. Shit. Toilet, yes? I can do. No. Andy grabs Niccolo by the elbow. I know all the ways this can go wrong. Andy drags Nicky down the hall, insisting firmly. You sit here. Don't squat. Joe slumps over and presses his head to the table. Oh, Joe, are you going to be okay? Niall says, switching back to English and rubbing a hand through his hair and down his back. I'll be okay, he answers, into the table. I'm just tired. So, yeah. A cry comes from down the hall. Nicky, aghast. But this is paper! Joe snorts, then buries his head in his hands. I take it you didn't know how this would shake out, Niall guesses. Oh, well, you know Nicky. Joe waves a hand. doesn't like to tell too much, complicates things. Although apparently she doesn't know Nikki. Not this one, with the sharp tongue and distrustful eyes. The first night Niall had met the rest of them, in Goosenville, she had met Nikki's eye across the table, and he hadn't looked away. From the first moment she met him, Nikki always wore a half-smile around her, one that became full-blown in the aftermath of Merrick. But at that first dinner, it was restrained. She'd gotten half the story from Booker and Joe, that they were immortals hundreds of years old. Then the big reveal from Nikki. "I'm unhooked from time," he had said. "I die and revive in different times. Forward, backward. Last month I was in Egypt in 1510. Niall's face must have been easily read, because he had followed it up with, "You don't believe me?" "No, of course not." "Why?" He had seemed genuinely curious. "Is it so different from a soldier who won't stay dead?" "No, but you're talking about time travel," she had insisted. "I don't tend to call it that." He had folded his hands under his chin and stared at her. "Your name is Niall Cassandra Freeman," he pronounced. "You hate mushrooms, but love the time of day between afternoon tea and dinner, when you can have a glass of wine but still watch terrible TV. You're a fast thinker and fearlessly loyal. You wish you could be better at sculpture, but you've never really had the time. Am I correct?" Niall remembers baring her teeth. She'd been so angry. "You've been stalking me?" "No, no. You told me." "When?" 2021, which I believe is next year, yes?" He'd looked to Joe for confirmation. "It was a long time ago for me." Niall keeps rubbing at Joe's back and makes a mental note to tell him those details before the year is out. "So what do we do?" Niall asks. Joe gives himself another moment of despair. Then he raises his head up, and a visage of peace comes over his face. "We have a lot of work to do," he announces. "Weapons training, languages, history. Hell, you could do with a lot of the same yourself." He scratches a hand through his hair. "He said Paraguay was interesting this time of year. Guess there's a lot of hard work ahead." "Maybe," Niall says, "but it can wait until tomorrow. Come on, Joe, give yourself the day." "Paciencia, paciencia," he chants. They decide to take the day. They're all exhausted from the all-nighter and spent hours lying in various positions across the safe house. After his foray into the world of modern plumbing, Nikki doesn't emerge from his room again. Andy's eyes are hard as she begins preparing the safe house. This Paraguay safe house is relatively new to the team, bought on a whim by Booker in the last decade or two, not yet filled with memories and paraphernalia. It's more of a complex than a house, enclosed with a brick fence. Their backyard is a decent size, and beyond the fence are a few miles of half-tame forest before you get to the nearest town. Another hour's drive to a large city. A good place to hide and stay hidden. Andy gives out instructions, then gets in their truck and drives off to get some supplies. Dutifully, Niall and Joe get to work disassembling the safe house. The television is unplugged and packed into the garage, along with most things they can find that were invented within the last 50 years or so. Niall gets to keep her phone and charger, mostly for the photos of her family, and in case Booker or Copley need to get a hold of them. Joe finds a box for her to keep them out of sight, though. Andy returns hours later with the truck bed full of supplies. Food, ammunition, clothes for them all, maps, and many books. Joe flicks open a crate and surveys the cache of various weapons there. "Leading a revolution, are we?" he says. "Many times throughout history," Andy grins back. When the sun dips behind the mountains, Niall takes a plate with a sandwich, a glass of water, and some fruit down the hall to Nikki's room. She knocks gently and calls through the door. "The dinner is here." He opens the door a crack and is visibly relieved when he sees it's her. He takes the food offering with a murmur of thanks. "Are you okay?" she asks. The word doesn't translate. It's far too modern. "Happy?" "No, not happy in the slightest," Nikki responds. "But thank you for the meal." "Tomorrow is a big work day," Nell warns him. "You and me same. Lots to learn. I will go to bed soon." Nikki's eyes dart over her shoulder and around the hall. Then he opens the door further and bids her come in. The room was mostly clear of personal items. They'd only been living there for a few days before the mission, and Joe had asked Niall to clear the room of weapons as he'd carried a drugged-out Nikki through the building. There was a mix of clothes in the open cupboard. Not that this Nikki would know the difference between his and Joe's clothing. Nikki leaves the door open behind her, and Niall has a sudden recognition of chivalry, an intention to keep her virtue unharmed. That ship has long since sailed, but it's nice to know Nikki's thinking about it. "Can I ask?" Nikki starts. He passes the yellow post-it note to her, flipped over so she can see a message on the back. "What is this?" Her Italian is developing, and she understands better than she can speak, but her reading is pretty good, too. She takes a moment to read and reread it. "Trust them, little bird. They are good people, and one day they will be very important to us. I know you're scared, but our life with them is good and has so much joy. Be patient. Trust them. Trust me, Niccolo." "What does it mean?" he asks. Niall traces her fingers over the neat handwriting. "What do you think?" "My brother called me little bird," he says. "I haven't thought about it since I was a youth." Niall can't help smiling. "Why little bird?" He waves a hand heavenward. "I was always up in trees. Plus," he flicks a finger across his aquiline nose. Niall can't help but grin at that. "I think you are kind," she says, passing the note back to him. "Kind to people and kind to you." Nikki doesn't quite pull a face, but it's clear he doesn't believe her. He clearly doesn't know how to ask the next question. When is it? 2021, she answers. Crusades 900 years ago. He takes a deep breath. I was born closer to the life of Christ than I was to today. Niall waggles a hand. Maybe same, same. A laugh bubbles out, but Niall can't help the yawn that escapes her. Sorries, she mumbles. Of course. He beckons her to leave. You should sleep now, only... He squints up at the lights in the ceiling. Is it always bright here? Do you not sleep in the dark? This, here. She shows him the light switch, and after she demonstrates, he gives it a few experimental flicks. Mine, she points at the door across the hall, then the one beside his, Andy. All the way at the end of the hall is pointed out as Joe's. It's so far away from the others. They've never had a need for four bedrooms before. Niall was filling in the space left in Booker's absence. Joe is making do with a pull-out sofa in a spare room. He wouldn't hear of Niall trying to trade with him. You have so many rooms, Nikki says. I presume the bed would be shared among us. Of course, Niall has had a fast education in the history of communal sleeping since meeting the team. She learned that separate rooms and separate beds are an unnecessary luxury. After a few sleepless nights, she quickly got used to the feeling of a leg thrown over hers, or rolling over and bumping into Andy's back. And the size of the modest queen bed in Nikki's room must be boggling the crusader's mind. All yours. She waves a hand over the whole room, Joe's clothes included. Good night, Nikki. If trouble you have, I am here. Good night, Niall. Niccolo's eyes open as his door cracks open. He's lying flat on his back, hands folded in his chest. He looks to the door and sees Joseph there peering in. He raises his head and lets it fall with a crack against the bedhead. You again, he says.
Me again, Joseph agrees. Why is it that every time I wake up, you are there?
No, wait. He sits up and swings his legs over the side of the bed. He's still wearing all the clothes Joe had dressed him in the day before, belt and all.
Why are you always there when I die? Do you like seeing me gasp for breath? Does it bring you pleasure to see your enemy die and die and die again?
Never.
Niccolo puts on a cruel sneer. I have seen your face many times in death. I am there when you die, so I can be there when you wake up.
Joseph's expression is inscrutable. He makes an aborted half motion to step inside the bedroom and close the gap between them, but Niccolo's nostrils flare and he doesn't move.
Don't act like you care, Niccolo warns.
Joseph's posture straightens. Niccolo has landed a blow and he revels in his success.
Come and break fast, Joseph instructs perfunctorily. I will lay out clothes suitable for training.
Training is a very generous term for what they do. Joseph packs huge bags full of heavy inventory for them all, and Andy straps them up with equipment, only half of which Niccolo recognizes. Then the four of them run for miles at speed from their compound and into the jungle surrounds. Niall calls it PT, and Niccolo vomits 3 times before noon. They explain that war changes shape through the years, becoming more fast-paced, less drawn-up battle lines and slow trudging of armies, more quick drops in horseless carriages, or flying horseless carriages, carrying the soldiers most of the way to the battle. Niccolo will believe that when he sees it. Out in the middle of the untrodden forest, in a small clearing overlooking the valley, Niccolo gets his first introduction to gunfire, barring his brief experiences on the receiving end. It's impossibly loud, one gun making a sharp booming sound greater than the noise of a whole battle. He covers his ears and winces, then feels like a fool for being the only one who does.
Andy, Joseph says once he notices, we should get him some earmuffs.
Andy has enough sympathy to at least look guilty. We're all the way out here now. You can run back, or we could do this another day?
No, I'm fine, Niccolo insists.
He learns a lot of very specific words in English that day. Round, load, hammer, brace, fire, recoil, and all of them are repeated and drilled into his head as much as the safety aspects. The guns themselves are magnificent, enchanting and complex, and he is fascinated.
Niall sees his reaction and unloads a bullet. She pulls it apart to show him how it works, labeling everything as she goes. She pours gunpowder into the curve of a green leaf and summons a flame with a lighter. He startles, then laughs as the whole thing burns up with flames and sparks. Andy clears her throat, her face clearly meaning business, and Niccolo feels like a boy again, being caught with snails in his pockets at mass. Andy sets out the pattern for their training in clear terms. Weapons, language, and instinct training will be the focuses of the next few months. She gives instructions in their best-known language first, then again in the one they are learning for the day. Sometimes she gives it in English, then points at Niall, and she has to translate it for Niccolo, in a process Niall dubs Rosetta Stone teaching. But what it has to do with a little rose, Niccolo can't determine. They easily fall into their roles, the two teachers and the two students. The bitterness and suspicion Niccolo harbors doesn't lessen with the training regime. The first time Joseph lays out an array of knives before him, while Andy and Niall train with staves in place of swords, Niccolo weighs one with particularly vicious curve in his hands and considers slicing through his own neck. Somehow, as always, Joseph knows more than he should. I would ask you to please not kill yourself again so soon, he says, his voice steady. There is still so much for you to learn. Andy is mortal now, Niccolo muses. Perhaps I am too.
Don't, Joseph's voice lowers, and for the first time Niccolo feels he has touched a nerve of the man who is usually so unshakable. Joseph turns away, putting his back to Niccolo as he busies himself with the blades on the table.
When he speaks again, his tone is back to his usual steadiness. "This body, perhaps. But you still have many lives to live," Joseph says. "Killing yourself now would only prolong your trauma." Niccolo drives the knife point into the bench. "What the fuck do you know about my trauma?"
"You," Joseph starts, but his voice fails him.
"I know that you died many times."
"Dozens," Niccolo says. Why does it feel like he's twisting a knife in Joseph's gut when it's his own pain being exposed?
"Each one worse than the last. This is the longest I've stayed alive."
He rounds on Joseph, the only one he can be truly angry at.
"I have died every way a man can die."
And the worst part is that Joseph never rises to the bait, never yells back, or throws a punch, or spits in Niccolo's face. He just sits there and takes it, like he deserves the rage, and much more besides. It leaves Niccolo's anger burning through his heart and leaving a cold, empty hole.
"I know," Joseph says. "I'm sorry."
"Yeah, that's pretty fucking evident," Niccolo sneers. "You've been there almost every time doing fucking nothing. I heard you. They were cutting into my skull. And I could hear you, but you didn't stop them."
He drops onto the low wall and buries his head in his hands, cradling the place where the machine opened up his brain. When he looks up, Joseph's eyes are shining with unshed tears.
"I was captured too," Joseph says, and finally his voice quavers. "They had me and they kept," he breaks off. "And there was nothing I could do."
"Well," Niccolo waves a dismissive hand, "how kind of you to at least remember."
"It was recent." Joseph takes a seat on the wall next to him.
"Niccolo, please. You have to believe that I tried."
"Do I?"
The words are harsh, but Niccolo has no power behind them. He's just tired. Before Joseph can speak, Andy and Niall come back into view, sweating and panting. Niccolo averts his eyes out of respect for the women. Their bare, glistening arms and legs are an unfamiliar sight for him. His chivalry earns him a laugh from Niall and Andy, ruffling his hair like a child. The heat of the moment is broken, and Niall declares herself too exhausted to continue training for the day. Without a word of the palpable tension they have interrupted, they all push inside, where Niccolo quickly retreats again to his bedroom. Niall winces as she hears the bedroom door slam shut. Joe stands at the mouth of the hallway and sighs. Andy walks past him and rubs his shoulder. "I'll get dinner." Niall holds onto Joe's arm and gently pulls him away to the living room. "This must be killing you," she says, once they are collapsed on the couch together. He doesn't look like he disagrees.
It is building a foundation," he finally says. "You do not rush a building you intend to stand for 1,000 years.
He looks up at her stricken face and pulls her close.
"Oh, Sora Nina.
Do not fret. This is not the first time I have lived for years with a Nikki that does not yet love me." Niall mumbles into his chest.
"Yeah, but has he ever hated you before?"
He smiles ruefully. "Patience, patience." The next morning, Niccolo is wide awake in the pre-dawn light. He doesn't sleep well in this new strange land. Softness of the bed be damned. It helps him sometimes to pretend he has not traveled through time, just to an undiscovered land where they do strange things like ignite a flame with a single finger and eat such an impressive array of food for an ordinary evening meal. The world is too quiet here, and the lights in the other rooms keep him awake, even though he has a door of exquisite craftsmanship shut firmly between himself and the others. So he's awake when he hears the shuffle of feet, a quiet murmur of voices meant to not disturb. Niccolo moves in silence, gets up, and inches to his bedroom door. He ever so slowly turns the handle and opens the door a crack. He hears the voices louder now, but no more distinct. Joseph, he presumes, from the deep timbre of his voice, and one of the women,
He can't tell which. A door opens nearby and Joseph emerges, his back to Niccolo. Who owned which room again? The question is answered when a pale hand reaches out and Andy squeezes Joseph's shoulder. He positively melts into the touch and mutters his thanks. Joseph wanders down the hall to his own bedroom in the secretive early hours of the morning. He is loose-limbed and more content than Niccolo has ever seen him. Oh, Niccolo thinks and closes the door. To be continued. Retrograde, Chapter 7, Paraguay, Part 2. The days bleed into weeks, bleed into months. Each day starts with hard physical training, then weapons and languages, then, as the sun sets, history and tactics. When Niall questions the benefit of PT every morning, Andy gives her a very unimpressed look over her shoulder. We're not trying to be fit. I'm teaching you to push through the pain, Andy says. She halts their marching up the mountain and turns. They are all standing downhill of her, Joseph taking up the rear, and it gives her an even more imposing figure than normal as she towers above them. She speaks, translating fully into both Ligurian and English, something she only does when it's important. Never stop moving. Push through the pain, even when you're coughing up blood. Don't stop, because a still target is a dead target. She jerks her head first at Niccolo, then at Niall. If you die on the field, it's a roll of the dice, what happens next. And if you die, there's no guarantee you don't get captured. You have to keep moving. Stay alive. If you go down with eyes on you, Joseph says from behind, you stay down. Play dead all the way to the morgue if you have to, and break out when backs are turned. Survive, evade, resist, escape, Niall says, and Andy translates for her. We usually put escape a little higher on that list, Andy adds with a smile. It's three full days of training before Niall can't take it anymore, and she cracks over breakfast. You are like shit, she says to Nikki. Joe is drinking his breakfast tea when she says it, and it snorts right up his nose. Excuse me? Nikki asks. You, she gestures wildly. You are shit. She pinches her nose, then mimes waving a bad smell away. I am not sick, Nikki says. Joe has stopped coughing and beats on his chest to stop from aspirating. She's not talking about miasma, Niccolo, he explains. She's saying you smell. Nikki looks baffled. I wash. I have been washing with the basin every day. But have you been using soap? Nikki just stares at them. You did not supply me with any, he says. I will make my own if you wish me to pay for my lodging. You need only supply me with the tallow. No, Joe says with a laugh. He doubts Niall would cope with casual handling of animal byproducts in the house. He rubs his brow as he recalls the basin in his and Nikki's room. Oh, the fucking liquid soap, pump action. Andy chuckles. Soap or no? His hair is getting greasy, and I will not be the one explaining how showers work. Everyone looks over at Joe. He raises his hands in surrender. Even I will not have that argument before PT. So they go out again and push the truck uphill together. Niall feels her knees give out several times, but she gets hauled up by one of the team every time, and they keep going. By the end of it, Nikki is drenched in sweat, and his arms are visibly shaking. His hair is stuck to his face and the back of his neck, and Joe looks away quickly. Joe shows him how to work the shower, explains the shampoo and conditioner, proper procedures for soap, and even explains the razor and shaving cream. Are beards not the custom here? Nikki asks. Joe rubs his own. Variety is common. You may groom yourself however you like. Nikki frowns. The dusting of whiskers across his face always grows a lighter shade than his hair for the first few weeks before it fills out and darkens. The fact that Nikki hasn't shaved since the mission has made it easier for all of them, easier to differentiate this Nikki from the other versions they know. Joe can always tell, though, can always see a change in the way he holds himself, the tension in different places, the way he reacts.
Personally, I don't mind this gruff, Joe gives a half grin, but the flirtation doesn't land. Nicky is still staring at himself in the large mirror, and Joe remembers the poorly polished glass and metals of the ancient world, how Joe knew the face across from him better than he knew his own for centuries, how he still does. He has to look away, so he nudges the laundry basket with his foot and explains it. Niall will wear fresh clothes every day, but I understand if that feels strange, Joe says. I'd say throw in the sweaty clothes and under things daily. Everything else can keep until it holds the smell. I'll wash everything in the basket every few days. I'll wash my own clothes, Nicky says, his voice pulled tight. Joe doesn't mention that it's Joe's shirt on Nicky's back. The familiar smell of their bodies fills the small bathroom. Joe aches to touch. It's no trouble, Joe insists. The machine does all the work. Nicky fiddles with the towel left out for him, so different to touch from the scraps of non-absorbent linen they used to dry themselves with. Where is everyone else? He asks. Joe's heart stutters in his chest. Does this version of Nicky, so young and hasn't yet met them, does he dream of Booker and Quinn? He'd always said he doesn't have the same dreams. Who do you mean? Nicky waves a hand at the shower. The one who burns the fires and pumps the water? Are they far away? Or do you hide the surfs underground? Oh, no, no, it's pumped and heated by power and pressure and... Joe finishes lamely with the default answer they've been giving him for everything. Machines. Machines, machines, Nicky grouses. In the end, Nicky keeps the beard. It's another week before Nicky explodes at Andy about the machines. She's explaining why they have so many types of cloth, that they're not rich. It's just that's what's available to them, and a damn sight cheaper than going back to tailor-fitted like Nicky is exclaiming. All this nonsense! He stamps his feet as he paces back and forth. Lighting fires, washing clothes, making them. Does no one do honest work with his own hands? A fair point, but still. Do you want to go out and chop wood all afternoon? Yes, Nicky exclaims. At least that makes sense. Not this endless running and pushing and speaking four languages. Nicky leans his back against the wall and his shoulders sag. The sight of Nicky in pain causes a visceral ache in Joe's heart. The worst part is not being able to reach out to ease the thumping heart with a touch of his fingertips. He can only do what he can do. Okay, Joe says. Nicky's eyes slid open and over to him. What? I said, okay. If you want to chop wood, that's what we'll do, Joe says, shrugging. We're not prison guards here, Niccolo. If you want something, just tell us. We are trying to help. Nicky looks down at his hands that were shaking from exhaustion after PT not long ago. The muscles have healed, but they still move sluggishly. Perhaps tomorrow, Nicky concedes. Tomorrow, Joe agrees. They train with swords and shields in the compound courtyard. The image of Niall's absolute glee when she upgraded from staff to sword is not one Andy will soon forget. They disassemble guns on the table in the house. This is something Nicky enjoys, the calming repetition, the way the pieces fit together and pull apart. It's the first time he doesn't immediately retreat to his room after Andy proclaims training is done for the day. He stays at the table as Joe prepares dinner, shakshuka with a loaf of defrosted bread, pulling the pieces of the pistol apart and cleaning each one. Niall explains she had enough of gun maintenance training back at basic, so she pours herself a generous glass of white wine. She sits across the table from Nicky as his diligent fingers work an oiled cloth around each piece of metal. They've been keeping Nicky's diet simple, lots of vegetables and stews. They've basically gone vegetarian after he was gobsmacked from being served meat two meals in a row. But one thing Niall refuses to live without are ginger cookies that Niall had learned from her grandmother as a teenager.
It is a small luxury, something that she bakes about once a week and slowly works her way through. Nikki had tried a small cookie from the first batch, and his eyes had almost rolled out of his head. "Too much," he had insisted. "Such sweetness and spice are overbearing."
"Never," Niall had shot back.
She sits across from him, the last little stack of cookies on a plate in the middle of the table, right alongside the gunwale. It takes some prompting from Niall, but eventually they begin speaking. When the two of them talk, it's always fractured in either of their languages. They label and describe and comment on everything they can see, bouncing back and forth, leading to little jolts of joy when the message is successfully understood. It typically devolves into Niall's cheerful smile beaming at him, while Nikki can't help but be won over. Nikki tests out the offer from Joe earlier to ask for something. He asks for a bottle of wine, and it is given to him freely. He only pours himself a glass, Niall preferring the white, and he drinks the whole thing before dinner. Andy swoops in and packs away the guns before he's more than a third through the bottle. Andy eyes Joe over the meal at the way Nikki sways at the table, keeps dropping his spoon. He stumbles down the hallway and straight to bed, collapsing before he even closes the door. Later, once the house has gone to bed, Joe steals a quick glance at Nikki's form on the bed, then shuts the door. He goes, as he often does these dark, lonesome nights, to Andy. They speak in hushed voices back and forth, lest they wake the subject of their conversation from his wine-induced coma.
"I won't fail this team the same way twice."
Andy's voice is harsh, and even being quiet, she gestures broadly with her arms. "He's not a prisoner, Andy," Joe defends. "I'm not going to deny him his freedom to make bad choices.
If he wants out, he knows where the weapons are. Hell, he knows he could follow the road to the village if he wanted to.
We've asked him to stay so we can teach him. I'm not throwing that trust away based on one bottle of wine."
"It's not the fucking alcohol, Joe. If it was, I would be the worst offender."
She sits on the edge of the bed and buries her head in her hands.
"It's the misery, the hopelessness. How can I be making the same mistake again? I've lost God knows how many years with one of mine at the bottom of a bottle," she hisses. "I don't have that kind of time again."
Joe sits down beside her and wraps an arm around her.
"We know it doesn't stick, boss."
Yeah, but how long does it last? God, and when?" Joe doesn't have an answer for that, so they get under the covers and hold each other until the pre-dawn light. The next day after training, Niall can't help herself. She hadn't heard Joe and Andy's conversation, but she's just as concerned about the way Nikki shies away from any conversation and camaraderie. It all feels wrong. She goes down to the garage storage and finds the Booker's collection, a few boxes of books.
"He won't mind," she tells herself, cracking open the first.
"I'll just steer clear of old editions." Except she's not an appraiser, so she has no idea what she's working with. And as she pulls out large Russian tomes and essays on financial systems, she starts thinking that would be more than Nikki bargained for. Was the concept of a novel even invented by then? Shit. Right at the bottom of the first box, she finds a familiar-looking softcover book. It's a little beaten up, and yes, Booker's ripped out a few of the thin pages of the introduction to make cigarettes, but it's still undoubtedly the Holy Bible. Nueva Versión Internacional. "Thank you, Booker," she murmurs, and quickly sends him a text. When she knocks on Nikki's door and waits, she shuffles her feet and feels ridiculous. Nikki opens the door, and his expression is clearly one of concern. She smiles at him. That always seems to make him feel better. "I have a gift for you," she says in English, the language of the week. She pulls the Bible from behind her back and hands it to him. Nikki's eyes widen, and he takes it from her with trembling hands. "Español," she says. Spanish was all they were allowed to speak last week. Nikki had caught up quickly. "I looked up if verses and chapters were a thing in your time when you were at the monastery, but they weren't. So I highlighted key parts to help you find your way through it." Nikki beckons her inside.
Wild, he murmurs. And Niall blames herself for him picking up that particular English exclamation. The language of the people, yes? He places the Bible spine first on the little desk and opens it gently to the middle. He lands in Isaiah, and Niall has taken a marker to Isaiah 11. He gasps. You did this? Yeah, you know, the root of Jesse and all that, she says, but Nikki is horrified. What will the Abbazia say?
Abbazia?
The Chiesa, the Monastero.
Monastery?
Yes, yes. What will say when you give back good book is damaged?
Oh, no, it's ours. Well, I got it from a friend. He said it's fine, you can keep it.
Oh, shit, was it like the Quran back then? Like, you can't damage it?
Nikki just stares at her.
Niall, this is paper. This is book.
Oh, right.
She holds up a finger for him to wait and darts back into the hall. She returns with a notebook and a fine point pen.
For you. We have lots of books.
He slowly turns the fragile pages, reading snatches of verses here and there out loud. Even Niall can tell his Spanish accent needs work, but he nods thoughtfully, like he understands the passage.
Thank you, Niall.
His smile is small but present, and she doesn't feel guilty about leaving him to his work that evening. They're working too hard. Niall knows it from the way Nikki falls into bed each night and barely interacts with them. Knows it from the way his eyes are getting harder. It's been weeks of the same, and rather than opening up to them, trusting them, he stays alone in his bedroom for longer hours. Even as his grip on the languages gets better, Nikki gets quieter, less trusting of the team with his thoughts. He gets on best with Niall, though, both bound together by the equal suffering of being students to immortals much older than they are. It has been a pretty good day, all things considered. Nikki took an axe and saw and felled a tree in the forest. Then he and Niall threw a rope around it and dragged it half a mile back to their base. Halfway through the journey, Andy pops out from behind a tree and hurls rocks at them. They find what cover they can as Andy transitions to firing bullets into their legs and over their heads.
You won't always be armed, she yells between barrages.
Niall signals her plan to Nikki, but it is only being half understood. They both reveal their position too early and are met with a second smattering of cover fire, keeping them in their place.
Communicate, Joe calls from some unknown location.
They pause for a beat behind the small tree to formulate a better plan, check it as understood, and execute it. By the end, Nikki has wrestled hard with Andy, not quite pinning her, but with enough gusto that she loses her gun, and she commends him. And Niall has thrown the axe at Joe as a distraction, gotten Joe's gun, and shot him through the shoulder.
You could have killed me, Nikki accuses, giving Andy back her gun and popping bullets from his legs.
No, I wouldn't have, Andy says.
So it was a good day. But still, Nikki shuts the door to his bedroom and doesn't come back out.
What does he do in there for hours? Niall complains to Joe as she plays sous chef.
She's dicing herbs as fine as she can. Without a processor, kettle, and microwave, the meal often takes longer to prepare.
Lately?
Translating that Bible you gave him, I think, Joe says. He asked me if penance was a correct translation of arrepentimiento.
Oh, Niall says. Sorry if I overstepped.
No, it was a good idea. Thank you, Niall. He often reads the scriptures in the local language to acclimatize. I should have remembered Booker had his usual habit of leaving one around.
Hell, if he wanted to translate, I could have given him the Koine Greek, Andy says, munching on her pre-dinner snack of peanuts.
Didn't he speak that at one point? Joe asks.
With an accent. I always thought that was weird. We barely even went there before it faded out.
What, you guys don't ask? Niall's eyes flick between them.
We accept what he tells us, Joe says. It's not my place to intrude.
How is it not your place? Niall grumbles, then waves a hand when Joe starts.
I know, but I'm serious. We should bring back team movie nights.
We are not doing that, Andy says. She's firm, but she's grinning.
Why not? Niall asks. It will give him something to do, a reason to stay out with us.
We're not here to teach the conveniences of 21st century life. We're here to teach him how to survive, Andy says.
Niall reaches her boiling point. We should be teaching him family, Niall exclaims. Trust, kindness, joy in life. Isn't that the Nikki we know?
They don't respond to that, but Joe hangs his head. I've been trying, he murmurs finally.
Niall's heart sticks in her throat. I know, of course you have. Fuck.
She touches his shoulder.
But it's okay to try something new.
PT the next day is chopping firewood again, but this time Andy has them stack a bonfire in the middle of the courtyard. Nikki gets a brief lesson in explosives, but it's only an excuse to throw accelerant on the fire and watch it go up.
You sure about this? Niall asks, carrying out evening snacks and a bottle of wine.
How do you think we passed the time before the invention of television, Niall? Andy asks with a grin.
Sat around staring at each other?
By the time the sun is slipping behind the mountain, they're all lounging around on unchopped logs, working on their second glass of wine, talking and laughing and making little challenges for each other, like flicking grapes into the air for the other to catch. Niall decides she needs something to soak up the alcohol in her stomach.
I could go for some toast, she says out loud, in the way you do when you want someone else to do the work for you.
Then go, Nikki giggles at his own joke until he hiccups.
I'm serious, Niall is clearly not. I haven't had toast since you got here and we packed away the toaster.
Toaster?
A machine to heat bread and make toast, Andy supplies.
A machine? Nikki exclaims and throws his arms to the sky. God forbid you hold bread over a fire for a few minutes.
They laugh, Joe falling backwards as he does so. Niall stands up indignantly.
I will.
She sways with the air of someone who is drunk but desperately trying not to appear so. I'll show you, Mr. DeGeneva. I'm perfectly fine without a toaster.
She isn't fine without a toaster. Two pieces of bread are sacrificed to the bonfire before she figures out how to get the bread to stay on her stick. Her patience is rewarded. She gets a nice golden crunch to go with her peanut butter.
They throw potatoes, another New World vegetable Nikki has developed a taste for, wrapped up in tin foil into the coals, and eat them with cooked mince and sour cream. After dinner, Andy stands up and regales them with a poem.
Niall suddenly has an appreciation for the title epic given to these ancient poems. Andy starts speaking and doesn't stop for almost a full hour. It's all in rhyming couplets and in a version of English that sounds older than Shakespeare, but Niall lets go of the need to understand every word, and the poem sings to her. It's the story of two lovers on either side of a war. There's a journey to find an animal king's missing cloak and plenty of funny side characters. Joe keeps the bead on the side of a hollow log and dutifully participates with the call and response moments. It's the most incredible thing Niall has seen Andy do since the massacre at Goosenville. At the end, Niall and Nikki jump to their feet with applause and cheers.
What the fuck? Niall asks. How did you remember all that?
I told you, we didn't always have television, Andy laughs, and I predate the written word. Any fun you want to have has to come from your own head.
Was that a creation of your own mind? Nikki asks.
No, that came from a little village in Hertfordshire about 600 years ago. The parts I forgot I had to rewrite, though.
Now, signora, Nikki says, downing the last of his wine, it is my turn.
He launches into a bawdy song in Ligurian, one that has him kicking up his feet and dancing in circles around the bonfire. It's surprisingly dirty, about a woman who calls out to the chimney sweep and has a lot of jokes about her chimney hole and how he squeezes in to clean it. Even Niall, her Ligurian slowly developing, picks up the innuendo. Everyone is laughing with tears in their eyes when he's done. The final verse about a baby that pops out of the chimney all covered in soot and looks like the chimney sweep. He bows with a flourish and a big grin.
I thought you were a priest, Niall gasps out.
Of course, Nikki says. All the best songs were performed in the church courtyard.
That was amazing. You got another?
Nikki hums and scratches a hand through his growing beard.
One that needs a partner, but I respect you ladies too much to impinge on your honor and ask you to participate in such a display.
Andy snorts into her whiskey. Shows what you know. But Niall reaches over and slaps her shoulder to shut up because Nikki is pulling Joe to his feet. Joe goes willingly, following Nikki's lead to stand side by side, arm in arm. Then Nikki starts to sing. It's another ribald comedy, this one about a semi-blind knight and multiple bouts of mistaken identity. Nikki plays the knight, and Joe is cast as various people and even animals that the knight mistakes for his wife. The knight dances around town and engages in double talk with the priest, the farmer, the beekeeper, and each time Nikki pulls Joe close and acts out feeling Joe up, touching his robes, his beard, the buzzing of his bees, and casts him away when he realizes it's not his wife. Joe's cheeks go pink halfway through and stay that way. The little play ends with the knight coming across a horse, Nikki grabbing Joe all over and talking about strong limbs, a steadfast companion, and long eyelashes, and pronouncing he has found his wife at last. He dips Joe over his knee, and, finishing a pun on the word mount that somehow still translates, spins him around and jumps on his back like a piggyback ride. They hit the ground in a pile of limbs, laughing uproariously. Applause follows, but Joe isn't too quick to get up. He stays sprawled on Nikki, his arm across Nikki's chest, his head on his shoulder, and shouts to the heavens, "Bravo! Bravissimo!" Nikki matches Joe in pinking his cheeks at the praise.
"It's better with instruments," Nikki says, suddenly shy again. "And if you're in the courtyard with the town, you can grab any person from the party. There's a verse for every job."
"I don't know. I think Joe enjoyed his part." Andy chucks a peanut at their touching heads. They waste the rest of the evening telling stories and drinking wine. Andy introduces Nikki to the hard stuff, and he develops a quick taste for rum over whiskey. Nikki demands a folk song from Niall's homeland and doesn't believe her when she has nothing to offer. The only thing that pops into her mind is "I'm a Believer" by Smash Mouth, and there's no way she's singing that, no matter how drunk she is. The night creeps on, and it is the most relaxed they've been together since before the mission that brought them in this younger Nikki. Something seems to have shifted in Nikki, even though he's still reserved. He no longer looks at them with suspicion. It's a change in their training plan, too. They start doing more hands-on tasks. Andy starts with Nikki. "You did well the other day disarming me," she says, pacing back and forth on a large mat they pulled outside. "See if you can try and pin me." Nikki lowers his center of gravity and raises his arms. He goes to grapple with Andy, but as soon as he makes his first move, she pulls a gun from her waistband and shoots him in the thigh. His knees give out and he yells, but stops himself from collapsing.
"That's dirty tricks," he says through gritted teeth.
"Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot we were so in the time of chivalry and gentlemanly conduct."
Andy gives a satirical bow. "Now, are we going to brawl or are we going to brawl?" Nikki launches at her and she gets two more shots off before he gets to her. He collapses to the ground 2 feet away. Andy tosses the gun to the ground and rubs his shoulders. "Come on, Nico, push through the pain." He glares up at her. And as soon as he has his feet under himself, she grins and dances back, fists raised. They fight every day from then on, Nikki trying with all his might to land a hit or take her down, even while being shot at or fought off with her labrys. After 2 weeks of trying, he finally does, and Andy celebrates her bloodied nose with a whoop. "If you've ruined thousands of years of my good looks with one punch, I'm going to be very upset," she says, in a tone that suggests she very much wouldn't be. His reward for the successful hit is a big black case Andy pulls from her room. "I was going to save this until after we'd done shotguns, but I think you deserve it," she says, swinging an arm over his shoulders.
They're so much more free with their affection now. Nikki smiles softly through their touches, even if he doesn't initiate them himself.
Andy gestures for Nikki to crack open the case.
"By God's nails,"
Nikki whispers. Inside the case is the most incredible gun Nikki had ever seen. It's long and thin, and has several parts placed carefully around it.
It's beautiful, Andy.
He traces a finger along the narrow barrel of the gun.
What is it?
Andy grins and presses a kiss to the side of his face. It's yours.
Niall.
She buries her face in her pillow and doesn't respond.
Psst, Niall, wake up.
She startles awake, fully alert but still confused. Nikki is at the foot of her bed, his eyes wide with glee.
Nikki, what's wrong?
I learned the date, he says, like that explains everything.
Niall rolls over and checks her clock on the bedside table.
Nikki, it's 5:30 in the morning.
Precisamente, on the 15th of August.
She flops down on the bed then, when Nikki averts his eyes, pulls the sheet to her neck over her sleeping tea.
What's so special about August 15th?
It's Assumption Day, he answers.
He bounces lightly on his toes.
Nikki, assumption is exactly correct because you're acting like I have any idea what's going on.
The assumption of Mother Mary, when she was taken into heaven, Nikki says. You are Christian, yes? I have seen your crucifix.
Niall touches the gold chain and cross around her neck.
I'm more of a Baptist than a Catholic, she says.
They're staring at each other, the way they often do when their languages break down.
Protestant?
Niall tries weakly.
Shit. Half a millennium early on that one.
Catholic. I know this word, Nikki waves a broad arm. Everything. Universal, yes?
Catholic in the sense of all Christians everywhere, every when. That's something Niall remembers from Sunday sermons.
Sure, what the hell?
Yes, I'm part of the Universal Church.
Then we must celebrate.
Nikki's voice is a stage whisper as he glances at the door.
I don't think Andy is Christian, and I didn't think the Muslim would care.
Nikki,
Niall admonishes.
The church forbids work on a holy day, he says in his excited whisper again. Not even two immortal teachers can command we train today.
Realization dawns on her. Holy days. Nikki wants a holiday.
You want to play hooky?
He twitches his head to the side. How do you play hooky game?
You sneak away from your teachers, Niall says, and have fun all day with your friends.
Nikki smiles broadly, all bright teeth and creases from his nose.
Yes, I want to play hooky.
And so they sneak away from the compound before the sun has fully risen. Niall leaves a note on the counter so Andy doesn't raise the jungle to the ground looking for them, and it takes her phone, but otherwise they give no excuses. Niall drives the truck, and Nikki almost screams as they barrel down the dirt drive to town.
These machines, he curses.
Assumption Day seems to be a public holiday in Paraguay because the town is a lot busier than usual. There are some stalls set up, and Nikki, despite not knowing the language or the time period a few months ago, fits in smoothly. The dialect of Spanish that the locals speak is a good challenge for their burgeoning super spy skills, but Nikki is far more interested in the handwoven crafts, which he points out to Niall with victory.
See? No machines.
Niall is drawn to some gorgeous pottery pieces and for the first time tells Nikki she wants to do more sculpture, improve the skills she's got.
Well, Nikki says, you have all the time you want now.
And it's the answer she's been expecting all year. They buy street food and run through the town hand in hand. The whole day they feel like school children running about without teachers to scold them. Nowhere is that more pronounced than when Nikki gets his first glimpse of an alpaca.
Madre de Dios, he whispers. What is this sheep camel?
Right, Niall realizes, another thing unique to the new world. She explains, trying to remember that this man has never even seen a photograph of anything, let alone the exotic animals she takes for granted. Nikki asks the farmer if he may touch the alpaca, and when he does, he devolves into giggles.
It's so soft!
Niall sneaks her phone from her back pocket and opens the camera without Nikki realizing.
He puts his face to the soft wool of the alpaca's neck and rubs. Niall snaps a photo of his joy. Nikki doesn't even know what a phone or a camera is, but she's going to live for thousands of years, and she wants to remember this moment. To be continued.